So today I want to kind of continue on the theme introduced by Phil last time. About Noether's theorem. So the first thing I want to analyze in a little more detail, in a slightly different way than Phil did, is the factorization envelope. So we all know that if G is a Lie algebra, we can produce UG, an associative algebra. And there's a more fancy construction of this nature, which is, for example, discussed in Bills and Blumfeld's book. If G is what some people call a Lie star algebra, and other people will call a vertex Lie algebra, we can produce the chiral envelope or maybe you might call it the vertex algebra envelope. And this is a vertex algebra. So this is the very basic construction of lots of examples, which is really easy and doesn't really require any work. So the factorization envelope is something similar. So here, we're going to start with L, which is a sheaf of DGLAs, DGLA algebras on a manifold. And there's this technical assumption that sections, this sheaf, are C-infinity sections of some vector bundle. And that the differential and the bracket are given by differential operators. This is actually not that important. It's just a purely technical assumption. So don't worry about that too much if it's not so clear. And from this, we will construct the factorization envelope. So this construction, it encompasses universal enveloping algebra and the chiral envelope as special cases. But it's quite a bit more general. So as Phil Tsang mentioned, if you were to study this in higher dimensions, you might be led to studying higher Casimir algebras. Which have been studied by Ryan Williams and Kapranov and his collaborators. So, two examples to bear in mind. Where L is the Durand complex on OR tensor G as a sheaf on OR. Our L is the Dalbeau complex on C. Tensor G is a sheaf on C. Okay. So the factorization envelope is very simple. Sends it assigns to an open set U the Chevalley chain complex of the compactly supported sections of L on U. Here, this is Lie algebra chains. And this C means compactly supported sections. So for example, following lemma, if L is forms on R, tensor G, then the cohomology of the factorization envelope is equal to UG as an associative algebra. Okay, so recall that this is a factorization algebra on OR. Factorization algebras on OR give rise to associative algebras under some hypothesis, and it gives rise to this algebra. So here's the proof. So the Chevalley chain complex of compactly supported sections of L on an interval looks like the symmetric algebra of compactly supported forms on the interval, tensor G, shifted down by one. So actually, strictly speaking, what I'm going to prove is that there is a homomorphism. I'm going to prove that there's a homomorphism from here to here. And it's not hard to check that it's an isomorphism. If I take X in G, we let X 0 be X tensor f of t dt, where f is a bump function. Looks like this, around 0. And similarly, x of some value, say epsilon, is x tensor f of t plus epsilon. Is it t minus epsilon? So it looks like a bump function around epsilon. So we're going to play the same game we've always done to compute the commutator. So X, the commutator of X and Y is cohomology class of X0 times Y epsilon minus X0 times Y minus epsilon, because the product is given by doing things in the order given by the real line. Now, there exists a function g of t so that g is equal to 1 near 0, and that the derivative of g, d of g, is equal to f of, say, t minus epsilon dt minus f of t plus epsilon dt. So g looks like this. This is 0. Goes off there. Kind of, you know, epsilon is down here somewhere. Minus epsilon. Epsilon is up here somewhere. So if I differentiate it, it's going to look like 1 and then go back down to 0. And up here, it's going to look like that. So let's do our usual game. The derivative of x 0 times y tensor g, it's going to have two terms. Firstly, it's x 0 times y tensor dg, because this is because we have the Durham operator on the real line appearing. And then a second term, which comes from the Chevalier-Eilenberg bracket, like the Lie algebra chains bracket. Sorry. The second term comes from the differential in Lie algebra chains, and it's the commutator of x 0 y tensor g. This term comes from Lie algebra homology differential. Sorry, chains differential. Okay, so and this second term, so we conclude that at the level of cohomology, so the commutator of x and y is the cohomology class of x0 y epsilon minus x0 y minus epsilon. That's just given by the second term. So that's the commutator of x and y times f of t g of t. Since g of t is 1 near 0 and f is compact support, that's x y 0. So we've checked that there's a homomorphism. So let me do the two-dimensional example really quickly, and I'll be more quick with the 2D example, and I'll allow myself the luxury of using distributions rather than bump functions. We also need to keep the notation more compact. So the lemma is, if L is the Dalbeau complex of C tensor G, then the factorization envelope of L, its cohomology, is a vertex algebra, which is the level 0 Kass-Moody. So here's the proof. So the first thing we're going to note is that at the compactly supported Dalbeau cohomology of, say, a little disk, tensor G looks like, well, there's no compactly supported holomorphic functions, of course, the city bar equation is elliptic, but there is stuff in degree one. So it looks like z inverse g z inverse with a shift in degree one. Okay, and it's spanned by up to completion the delta function at zero and derivatives. So therefore, this argument tells us that the cohomology of the factorization envelope of L of a disk looks like the cohomology of the symmetric algebra of the Dalbeau complex with complex support on the disk, tensor G, shifted down by one. And I'm going to move the symmetric algebra outside the cohomology, but using a spectral sequence argument. So this is the symmetric algebra of G Z inverse, G adjoint Z inverse, which is indeed the vacuum module. For the Casmoody. Okay, so this is for the first check. We want to say we're going to recover the Casmoody vertex algebra, and we found the right vector space. So next, we want to do something about the OBEs. So we let, if I take x in G, we let x zero be x tensor, the delta function of zero. We want to show the we want to compute the cohomology class of x zero times y at z. So we're going to play the same kind of game as we did as before and ask, does this, if I put here is zero and here is z, x at zero, y at z, if I, you know, what kind of poles does this have as z comes to zero and does it extend continuously across the origin? So to compute this cohomology, let's call this z zero. That's called Yes, easier. To compute this cohomology class, we note that the delta function at zero is to factors of pi, d bar of 1 over z. So x tensor delta zero of course, this is not a trivial element in the compactly supported Dalbeau cohomology, but once I remove the compactly supported condition, it is d bar trivial. So this is d bar of x tensor 1 over z. Let's see. Well, so we're interested here in the analog of the commutator, which is the obstruction to extending this across the disk. So I want to see, well, the 1 over z allows me to completely remove x. But I don't want to completely remove it because 1 over z doesn't really decay fast enough to be an allowed object in the story. So let's instead write x tensor delta 0 is the bar of x tensor f over z, where f is equal to 1 near 0 and 0 far away. From 0, and this is plus stuff supported away from 0. So this is, at the level of cohomology, I can move this away from 0. So now let's do a computation, the same one as before, x tensor delta 0 let's times y tensor delta z0. Let's do our computation by saying, well, this guy is d bar trivial, or this d bar of it is something far away. So this is equal to d of x tensor f over z, y tensor delta 0. And there's going to be, so d has two terms, one of which is d bar, and the other of which is the bracket between the two things. So let's calculate the other terms. The next term is minus x y f z 0 over z. And then there's one more term, which is stuff something regular at 0. Namely, something like x d bar f over z y delta z 0. And actually, this last term here vanishes, because as long as z0 is small, d bar of f is 0, so this term is actually 0, so that's good. Great, so now have we finished our computation? We have, because f is 1 for z0 is small, that guy can be replaced by 1. And we have concluded that x times delta 0, y times delta z looks like 1 over z, x, y, plus. And this is the defining OPE of the Casimir algebra at level 0. Okay, any questions? I don't think I was super clear with this calculation, but are there any questions about it? Oh, sorry, yeah. Thank you. Yeah? Oh, yes, excellent question. So that's, coming to you next, you need to introduce a central extension. Suppose L is a sheaf of DGLAs, one shifted cocycle is a map, well, it's a cochain map. I'll call her, say, alpha. From LC, LC, this is a complex support, to the complex numbers situated in degree 1. Okay, so this is going to, something Filsang wrote down, and Filsang did it in a more fancy way involving L infinity algebras, but for most examples, you don't actually need that. Like in particular, the Casimir example, it's just an ordinary kind of cocycle except for this shift. So, for example, if L is equal to the double complex on a Riemann surface, tensor G, there's one shifted cocycle. Where alpha of, say, what do I call my L1, L2, is the trace in some representation of G of, the integral of the trace in some representation of L1 del L2. So why is this one shifted? Because it's going to eat it. For this to be a top form, one here, one of these guys has to be a 0-0 form, and the other has to be a 0-1 form, so that when I apply del, I get a 1-1 form. So it takes one thing in degree 0 and one thing in degree 1, and it gives you a number, and that's the shift of 1. Okay, so given such a cocycle, we can form a central extension we can centrally extend the cosheaf of compactly supported elements, and we define the twisted factorization envelope by sending U to the Lie algebra chains of this compactly supported centered extension. But now, Lie algebra chains involves a shift down by 1. And when we do that shift, this centered element, C, becomes in degree 0. And I want to specialize the setting that centered element to 1. So the central element is in degree 0. Okay, and now the lemma the twisted factorization envelope of the double complex on the surface, tensor G, is the centrally extended Kasmudi, is the Kasmudi at level given by the central extension. Okay, so this should not be surprising to you, because in the formula for the Kasmudi central extension, there is an expression which looks a lot like this. So that's why. Okay. Any questions?
Why is there a substitute C on the LC? Are you forming
the central extension? The letter C has accidentally been overloaded. Here it means compact support. And here it means the central element. That was a bad choice for label for the central element.
There's no notion of central extensions of the not necessarily compactly supported.
Yes, there is actually. So here, if you look at this expression, you could view it as a central extension L, but you wanted to live in. You don't want to be able to integrate right? Because it's not complex to support if the integral won't converge. So instead, you just view this as a differential form. So this lives in differential forms on my surface with some shift, which I don't recall. Now, if I take the, if I pass the compact support and I take, replace this by its compactly supported cohomology, I'll find that because the compactly supported cohomology locally is one dimensional in some degree. And often that point of view is often better. So let me do one more example. On Rn, define a sheaf of Lie algebras. So DT Lie algebras by L is going to look like smooth functions in degree zero and smooth functions in degree one, and the differential is the Laplacian. And the Lie bracket is equal to zero. So L has a shifted by one central extension. How is that? Well, if I denote the element here by phi, and here by phi star, the co-cycle phi phi star is simply the integral of phi phi star. The lemma one can prove here, which is not difficult, the twisted factorization envelope of this is equal to the quantum observables of the free scalar. And here, let me kind of, what's the idea of the proof? The twisted factorization envelope looks like the symmetric algebra of, there's going to be a shift down by one, so this becomes in degree zero, and this becomes in degree minus one. In degree zero, I'll have complexly supported functions. And degree minus one, I'll also have complexly supported functions. And there's some differential. The elements here, so we're just going to recover exactly what we wrote down in the first lecture. These are the things I was calling OF. These were the things I was calling OG star. There's a term in the differential coming from the central extension. Or the differential of OG star OF is the integral FG. Okay. So here's our formulation of Noether's theorem. If we have a sheaf of Lie algebras of GGLAs, or more generally L infinity algebras, which acts on a perturbative quantum field theory. So just to pause, you know, quantum field theory is a local thing, so it would make sense to ask for a sheaf and not just a constant sheaf to act on it, because I mean L of U should act in the appropriate way on observables on U in a way compatible with the products. And Phil wrote down very explicitly what it means to act, at least in the classical level. So then there exists a cocycle, and to be really precise, this is going to be, in general, some L infinity version of the cocycle I wrote down. Alpha, kind of L infinity, and also H bar dependent. And a map of the factorization algebras from the factorization algebra of L to the quantum observables of my theory. So, of course, Noether said every symmetry gives a current. So this is some abstraction where if I have some symmetry, then I get some collection of operators, these OBEs I can control because it comes from here. OK, any questions? So let me now turn to some examples of this. If we take L to be C infinity, the one we just discussed, two copies of smooth functions, the differential is given by the Laplacian, then L acts on a free scalar field theory by translation. If you have a free scalar field theory, the equations of motion are linear and form an abelian group. So it acts on itself. So I'm going to change terminology slightly to distinguish between the symmetries and the fields. So if I call this, say, gamma star, if phi star are the fields of the scalar field theory, then sending phi goes to phi plus gamma, phi star goes to phi star plus gamma star is an action. Certainly classically this is an action. So the reason is, for example, H0 of L of U is the set gamma, which are harmonic. And if phi satisfies the equations of motion, plus unit phi is equal to 0, then so does phi plus gamma. So at the, after passing the cohomology of this guy and the equations of motion of our field theory, there is literally an action. And what's going on over there is some kind of off-shell, more homotopical version of that. So therefore, there exists a cocycle, alpha, such that factorization envelope twisted by alpha maps to the quantum observables. So of course, the cocycle is the one we just described. So this is going to explain why, I mean, this is such a simple fact, it doesn't really need an explanation, why free field theories have such a simple factorization algebra. Because they have lots of symmetries. Okay, so this is a slightly silly example in some ways, so let's do something more, slightly more interesting. Consider the theory. So we're going to yet again revisit topological quantum mechanics. With fields Pi, Q upper I, and Lagrangian integral Pi dQi. So this is an example that's much, much closer to the kind of standard examples in physics. So here the target is topological quantum mechanics in Rn. And Rn doesn't have a metric. So particular has the symmetries of a GLN. So, but better, it turns out that I take the Lie algebra to be forms on OR, tensor GLN, this acts. So to see this, we're going to use the BV formalism to rewrite this. And we'll take, replace PI by capital PI, which is now a form on OR, tensor ORN, and QI gets sent to capital QI, which is now a form on OR, tensor OR n G. So obviously, L acts on forms an OR tensor, or N forms an OR tensor, or N dual by the fundamental or anti-fundamental representations. So it's pretty obvious that this DGLA acts on these sheaves of cochain complexes, and it's also compatible with the odd symplectic pairing between them. So the way Phil explained it, an action is a function that depends on an element of L and P and Q. So it's an L-dependent Lagrangian. So we know how this guy transforms the fields. We figure this thing out just by using the symplectic pairing. So the function is simply S PI L QJ IJ on a different blackboard. Is just the integral of PI, the original action, PI L L J I Q J. So what's happening is we're just replacing this Durham operator by the covariant derivative associated with the symmetry. So to reiterate, this Lagrangian is odd symplectic pairing of P with L times Q. And this is the obvious action. So what does Noether's theorem tell us in this case? It says we're going to have a map from the factorization envelope of L to the observables of this free quantum mechanics. So at the level of cohomology, this factorization envelope is the universal enveloping algebra of GLN, and the quantum observables is the algebra of differential operators on ORN. And of course, we will find that our map is the obvious one. Okay, so any questions? Yeah?
Is it obvious
that the cocycle is true? Not quite obvious. You can convince yourselves for kind of degree reasons that there's no possible co-cycle here. If I remember correctly. So maybe not for degree reasons. It's associated to the fact that it's everything must be invariant out of GLN, and it's not possible to write down the right kind of tensor. Okay, so how does this work? So I haven't explained how Noether's theorem actually works. How do we explicitly get the map? So, fact is, if I take L, complexly supported element of U, and S, say in this case, P, Q, L, is the action, then the map from the compactly supported sections of U, which is, of course, inside of its symmetric algebra, is a shift of 1. Two quantum observables on U, all we do is we take this thing which couples our two fields, which couples our dynamical fields to this background field. It sends L to the derivative SPQL at L equals 0. Okay, this is a funny looking formula. So it means concretely, take the term linear in L and insert my complexly supported field into the action. So in the case we care about, this is the whole thing is linear in L to begin with, so we don't need to do anything complicated. But sometimes this can have quadratic dependence on L. And then things become more complicated, and we don't worry about that too much. So what do we get if we do that? So I'm just reiterating what I comment made by Tudor in Phil's talk. So if we take, say, L to be some elementary matrix tensor a bump function, then the element, the observable on OR, which is like some interval, is the integral of pi of t qj of t times my bump function. So here f is a complexly supported function on a little interval. Okay, any questions?
So that's the Noether charge.
this quantity here? Yes. So what is normally called an Noether charge would be I insert a delta function. But if you're working with more smeared stuff, it's like smeared out.
What happens in higher dimensions? In other words, are currents somehow implicitly built into this?
Like where I integrate over a space-like manifold, you mean? Or?
Yeah, or some sort of sphere.
Yes. Right, so in higher dimensions, I could imagine looking at complexly supported sections which live near a little slice there. And that would give me my current. So depending on what L is, there may not be anything living on a little ball, but they may only live in the whole manifold because of the shift in complexly supported cohomology. Okay, so maybe just finish this example. I want to get back to that in a minute. And so if we take the cohomology here, well, at the level of cohomology, in the algebra of differential operators in Rn, this is like PIQJ, and up to some annoying factor, about the identity matrix, these give a homomorphism from UGLN to diff Rn. So maybe quickly do a similar example. Beta gamma system. Here, again, I'll work in BV and I'll write capital beta. Gee, I don't even remember that's what the Greek capital beta looks like. Beta is a one star form living in the dual of some representation of a, and capital gamma is a zero star form living in some representation, or is a representation of G. And it will take L to be the Dalbo complex of C with coefficients in G. But evidently, L acts, just because G acts and Dalbo complexes can be multiplied, are an algebra. And the action which couples them and a background field in L is S beta gamma L is the integral beta d bar sub L gamma. So I've replaced d bar by the covariant derivative. So that's integral beta d bar gamma plus integral beta L gamma. And here I'm implicitly using the action of G in my representation and the pairing between the representation and its dual. So what's the map from the twisted factorization envelope of L to quantum observables? Well, it sends an element. If I take x in G, it sends x tensor delta function z equals 0 to 2. Well, I just look at this linear dependence on L and I insert a delta function. So that's beta gamma at 0. Let me insert. All right, this beta so we apply x to our element gamma, take the inner product with beta, and evaluate at 0. So this is the usual Noether charge. Which is often written J sub A a basis, that's an index for a basis of G. Okay, so in this example, we would expect from standard physics arguments that there is a central extension, and there is. But I won't go into details about that. So this implies we get a homomorphism from the Kass-Moody of G to the observables of the beta gamma system. Okay, any questions? So I feel a little slightly unsure about some aspects of this talk, but so maybe I'll spend 5 minutes explaining how this works, like how to check that we have such a homomorphism. So last time, we considered point observables, not smeared ones built based on delta functions. And we showed there exists a bracket, kind of a Poisson bracket, which measures the failure, if I take the product of two of them, measures the failure of that product to extend over the origin, the disk. And it here we had kind of some, there's some analytic stuff on the right-hand side. Like real analytic functions, modulo those that extend continuously over the origin. So in the beta gamma system, we have observables O of beta, which sends evaluates beta at 0. O of gamma, which sends gamma to gamma of 0. And we have, these might have some indices, upper I, lower I. And we had this, the bracket looked like O beta upper I, O gamma lower j is delta I j 1 over z. So we explained something very similar before using the free fermion model instead of the beta gamma system. So how does this? So here, because we have a map of quantum factorization alphas, in particular, we're going to get something at this semi-classical level. For the factorization envelope, there is a similar limit. Where we take distributions, say L, which are supported at the origin at zero, and these have a bracket. I'll call this space L bar zero. Well, defined in the same way, defined by the obstruction to extending the product over the disk. So concretely, for the Kass-Moody, the cohomology of compactly supported things, distributions supported at the origin, answer G, as we have seen, looks like Z inverse G Z inverse. So it's spanned by X tensor delta zero, X tensor the derivatives. And this bracket, x tensor delta 0, y tensor delta 0, looks like x, y times 1 over z. This is just a repeat of what we've done. So this was all, maybe this was a bit too long-winded, but this is all to say that if you take these observables, they do indeed satisfy these relations. In the case of GLN acting on beta gamma system, we want to check that O beta I O gamma J, that these guys have a bracket like the GLN Kass-Moody. This is very simple. So because this bracket is a derivation in each factor, we're going to contract this guy or contract that guy. So I'll get a term like O beta I, O gamma L, delta JK, 1 over Z, minus a similar term. So this does indeed look exactly like the GLN Kass-Moody. So I think I was a bit too much time in that example. So there's many fun things you can do, and it's really nice to do these computations at the semi-classical level, where central charges tend not to appear. And as a homework problem, I've asked you to study the case of the Virasoro and to see that you indeed find something with the kind of correct OPE. So let me maybe spend a few minutes on Tudor's questions. So if a group, suppose we just have a compact group, acts on a theory, what can we do? So here's the answer. Because that appears the next order in the expansion. So the trace 1 over z squared. So what we find here is a Feynman diagram that looks like this. So in the semi-classical OPE, that's all that contributes. The trace 1 over z squared is a Feynman diagram that looks like that, where I've contracted twice, and that's the next order. Let's say, synthetic group, say a Lie algebra. So just a Lie algebra is a constant Lie algebra, a constant sheaf. So it's the answer, this is equivalent to forms an M tensor G acting. And that implies what Tudor was asking about?
Yes.
He was asking, what happens on a higher dimensional manifold? And is there always a local north of current? And so on. I was trying to. So if we just have a symmetry, maybe we can phrase this independent of Tudor's question. So I started with a kind of a fancy definition of symmetry based on a sheaf of Lie algebras. That's not what you would normally start with. You would start with just some finite dimensional Lie algebra acting. And I wanted to analyze that situation. So it turns out there's a little homological argument that tells you this is equivalent to this sheaf acting. This implies we get a homomorphism from the factorization envelope twisted of forms on M tensor G to the observables of our theory. Now we're going to realize that there's something kind of funny about this. If I take D, a disk in Rn, then the compactly supported cohomology of D is in degree n. So this factorization envelope, so the cohomology of the factorization envelope associated with the Durham complex well, this looks like we take compactly supported cohomology and a symmetric algebra of it with a shift. G in degree n. In particular, if n is bigger than 1, there are no degree zero elements. Except the identity. So this tells us something funny. So in general, we build a local operator of degree n minus 1 from a symmetry. But well, doesn't this contradict what Noether said? Actually, it doesn't, because Noether wasn't concerned with local operators. She was concerned with things you integrate over codimension 1 manifolds. And that's, a priori, something a bit different. If I take n, if I take a manifold which looks like n times or, and then I look at the factorization envelope of the manifold valued on n times a little interval, and here n is compact, well, then what do we get? We get something which looks like, well, the symmetric algebra of the cohomology or compact support of n times an interval with a shift of, what was it, 1 minus n? So 1 minus n, n minus 1. I suspect I'm making a sign error in my shift, but let's not worry about that for now. Oh no, what is it? This is the issue. That shift of 1 minus n over there came from the compactly supported cohomology of a ball. And here we have complex supported cohomology of this. Oops. So this looks like symmetric algebra of, well, this shift by 1 cancels with the compactly supported cohomology of an interval, just the cohomology of n. Tensor G. And in fact, we get the universal enveloping algebra of cohomology of n tensor G. And here it's essential that n is compact, but this is good. Because in degree 0, this is UG. Any questions? I'll stop in maybe 2 minutes. I just wanted to explain one last fact which allows us to connect to more standard things. So, fact. If we have a theory which is not a gauge theory, so that the observables are in degrees less than or equal to zero, then an action of forms an Rn tensor G factors through just forms in degree less than or equal to one. And using this, this is just for degree reasons. This implies, in this situation, we can get a local note of charge. Okay, so one last point for the experts. This factorization algebra, where we take forms and tensor with G and take its envelope, in dimension one was the universal enveloping algebra. So you probably won't be surprised if you know this stuff, that in higher dimensions, it's the EN universal enveloping algebra. So in a more fancy way, note this theorem says if I have a symmetry, then I get a map from the EN universal enveloping algebra to my theory. Okay, so I'll stop there. Any more questions?
What is that? Why do we get a local charge?
Because if you look at the compact, if you shift this down by one and take its compact supported cohomology, there's stuff in degree zero. The degree zero stuff, I can take a delta function times dxi. And that's not, I can't remove that by a gauge transformation. So that really survives cohomology. So if I had if I intuited stuff like two forms and higher, my compact supported one form would have to satisfy a differential equation, but here it doesn't. Yes. Tudor has a paper about this. Davide has a paper about this stuff. Yeah. I'm not sure these particular ones are that interesting, but they do care about higher symmetries.
So in this beta gamma example, you had started with a representation, and then this thing we always do, sort of doubling it with symplectic representation.
Mm-hmm. Any symplectic manifold, you can do it slightly semi-classically, or indeed, but certainly any symplectic representation is fine, yeah. Or in the fermionic case, any real representation.
Thank you.